Hey, book lovers, if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you may want to listen up because we've got a couple of new things to tell you about Libro.fm. And if you're new here, we want you to know that Libro.fm is the best place to buy your audiobooks because it allows you to buy from your favorite local and independent bookstore. You can choose from more than 150,000 audiobook titles and get recommendations from booksellers around the country, all for the same price as that other company. You know which one I'm talking about. Except with Libro.fm, you'll be part of a different story, one that supports community. And now, just in time for the holidays, we wanted to let you know that you can also give audiobook memberships to the book lovers in your life. They come in 3, 6, and 12-month durations. Recipients will receive all of their audiobook credits up front, so no waiting each month for a new book. And they will also receive 30% off all additional purchases during the course of their membership. You can check out the link in our show notes for this deal. And as always, listeners of the Bookstore Podcast can get 2 months for the price of one when they use our new promo code, BookstorePod, all one word. That's a new promo code. Don't use the old one. At checkout at Libro.fm. That's Libro.fm. With each listen, take pride in knowing you're supporting local bookstores.
Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
I'm Corinne. It is the second read of our August challenge, which is to read a book in translation written by a woman, because August is Women in Translation Month. So we'll get to that in just a moment. But coming up in our scheduling, we have September's challenge, which is to read a young adult or middle grade book or a banned book. And the first book we will be reading for that is going to be The Marrow Thieves by Sherry DeMoline. And you can find that at your local bookstore or library. You can read that along with us, or please let us know what you will be reading for that prompt. We love to see what books everyone has picked out. I don't think we've got any other news that we're planning on talking about today, so we'll just get talking about our book discussion.
Okay.
Or we'll get to discussing our book. We're not going to talk about the book discussion. We're just going to actually discuss it.
We're just going to have a meta conversation about it. Okay, so Disoriental by Nagar Javadi was originally published in French in 2016, then translated into English by Tina A. Cover and published by Europa Editions in 2018. Disoriental has been nominated and won like several different, multiple, numerous literary awards.
Plural.
Among them that I recognized was like the Penn Translation Prize, and it was a National Book Award finalist also. So the kind of the summary, there is a lot of stuff that happens in this book. It's very plot heavy, so I'll kind of try to do my best, but the novel goes back and forth with different timelines. One is in the present in France, where Kimya, who is the youngest daughter of Darius and Sara Sadir, is waiting in a fertility clinic to see if she's pregnant. And she's sort of, I guess we can kind of assume she's thinking about different things as she's going through this fertility process, about like her history.
It feels like you've met her in the waiting room or something, and she's just kind of like telling you the story.
Yes.
In a way, I guess. I think that's kind of like the way that it is meant to feel. Whether or not that's successful, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I want to pause here. So like, I looked up pronunciations.
Uh-huh.
But you listened to it on audio.
I did.
So how did they pronounce Kimya?
Pretty much like that. Yeah. I mean, it's not like the name doesn't come up a whole lot, but Kimya,
that's true,
sounds right. The narrator of the audiobook said Sarah instead of Sara.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's right. And it's Sadr as far as the narrator went. I don't know. I think the narrator is also English, possibly. I think she's got an English accent a little bit. So who knows exactly how or what is correct in pronunciations here.
Yeah, so that's kind of the problem. Whenever I look up pronunciations of different words that I'm not familiar with, is they usually do give an American and British pronunciation guide, and they're different. And so I'm like, well, which would be the more correct one?
Right.
And sometimes like it can just be hard to find the correct one on the internet.
Well,
anyway,
then you also go into it and, you know, like, trying to be as respectful as possible, like, I'm not sure that my mouth can, like, just on the fly do the pronunciations from, like, a Persian word, you know?
Yeah.
Just some different sounds and stuff, and then I get all tripped up on it. So who, you know, we try our best, and we apologize for any obvious mistakes.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of nuances in pronouncing words that or letters and sounds that maybe we don't have that, like, yeah. It's just, and we not necessarily can't really hear the difference either.
I know.
Anyways, we are doing our best. Okay, so that's, she's sitting in the fertility clinic kind of going over her whole family history to herself, or like you said, as if you sat next to her. So she starts with her great-grandfather, who is very wealthy. He has multiple wives, and one of his wives, who is like, I believe, 15 years old, actually dies in childbirth after delivering twins. One of the twins has the great-grandfather's blue eyes, and he names her Noor. And Noor ends up marrying another wealthy man with blue eyes, Mirza Ali, and he is from Qazvin. And they end up having six blue-eyed boys. So Mirza Ali, like, chooses Noor essentially because she has blue eyes, and he wants to, like, pass this trait.
Yeah.
Onto his sons. And so, yeah, so they have six boys, all have blue eyes. Number four is Darius, who is the father of Kimya and her older sisters, Layli and Mina. Darius and Sarah are both very politically active, both speak out against the Shah's regime in Iran, and eventually also the Ayatollah Khomeini. They obviously are very scrutinized by both governments.
Yeah, they're targeted.
So Darius leaves Iran for France, and eventually Sarah and their daughters have to flee also. Their journey from Iran to Turkey and then eventually to France is very traumatic, and Sarah writes about it in a memoir that gets published. And then as we go on, we follow Kimya as she becomes a young adult. She kind of gets into a lot of trouble, and she moves a lot, different places in Europe, and eventually we find out what brings her to the fertility clinic in the first place.
Yeah, it's so funny because I'm not sure that would be how I wrote the description, but I think if you had 100 different people write the description, they would all come up with, like, a very different focus. So,
yes.
So, I don't know, it's a lot, and I think just the way that the book writes these storylines and gets to them is, like, so circuitous in a way. Like, it just all kind of circles back around and comes in and out. Like, I think it would be impossible to play, like, a game of telephone with this.
Yeah. There's so much that happens. It's something that I wrote down a few notes. It feels very much like the complete opposite of Minor Detail, because Minor Detail gave us essentially no context, because she wanted us to just look at this one crime that happened,
right?
Really.
One moment.
And right within that, we learn, because even though we're so focused on that one thing, we still learn a ton about the world around. But Disoriental does sort of the complete opposite, and we get so much context, history lessons in the form of footnotes, which I think is important. But
you know what, because I started reading the book, like, as the book, and I remember there being footnotes, but then when I went to the audiobook, I don't think it covered the footnotes. So I think you probably missed that in the audiobook, which, as a disclaimer, Becca already mentioned that I listened to it. We've been talking about that a little bit. My review is going to be mostly based on the audiobook version. And normally where I don't necessarily think, like, there's a huge difference between audio and the reading of a book, I think with this one, me having listened to it is going to color my experience of it a lot more than normal. So,
yeah,
just going to put that out there.
Yeah, it is kind of funny that we did the opposite, because Minor Detail, I listened to the audiobook.
Yeah.
And I actually thought that it added to the experience. Mm-hmm. But with Disoriental, I can see how this would be rough for me on audio. There's a lot of shifting of timelines. There's also it sounds so kind of silly, but Nor is called mother.
Yes.
And so it gets very confusing when it's like my mother in the same chapter as mother.
Right. Yeah. So like when she's telling the story of her own birth, her maternal grandmother, so Sarah's mother, is watching the older daughters, and she gets a phone call that says that mother died, but Kimya was born. And I was like, okay, oh no, like Kimya's mom died. But then you find out that Kimya's mom is alive. And that was like the most confusing, like a little bit to listen to. There were multiple times where I started chapters over and over and over again to listen. It probably would have been better for me to just read the book if I had been able to have the time to do that, but I didn't. So this one was a difficult listen for those reasons, and because if you were not paying the very closest attention, suddenly you would go from present tense, or like the present story, to something like who knows when it was. And so if you missed that little bit of context switching, it was like game over. You'd have to go back and figure it out again. So
yeah,
I don't necessarily recommend this as an audiobook unless you can really, really focus your attention on it. And like normally I do focus my attention on audiobooks, but like somehow I was managing to lose myself, like even like vacuuming. So who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be really critical right off the bat, but I'm going to be. I just think in general, there is so much in this book that we could have gotten cut out of it. I don't think it was necessary to know every single uncle.
No.
I think it's pretty clear this is autofiction. Because Javadi's short bio is pretty much exactly what happens, you know, in the novel. I understand why she made it autofiction, so she could, like, write about what other people are thinking, because you can't really do that in a memoir.
Right.
But I have trouble when people are assigned numbers, you know, or even like think about like when people write about like relationship advice in like Reddit and they give people just like a letter instead of their name. I find it even hard to remember that. Mm-hmm. So having uncle number one, uncle number two, uncle number three, uncle number, it was like an interchanged with their names.
Mm-hmm.
It was just hard for me to keep six people who all had a number assigned to them straight.
And I think like I'm probably more likely to get on like the sort of timelines that kind of like shoot off and all over the place with this one, because like part of the problem is I don't think we even got to know the main character really until part like side B, which by the way, the book is broken up into side A and side B, which I think is trying to make like references to music, which you don't even really find out that Kimya is grew up to become like you know, really into like the punk rock scene and stuff until the second part. And that's part of the issue too, is like I'm hearing this story about this person and I don't even find out like anything about who she is or what she's like until like, I don't know, almost 300 pages into the book. And that was difficult for me because like it felt like there was very little to grasp onto and to get to know, because like we were switching all over the place all of the time. And that information came so late in the game that I just felt like I felt a little bit detached from everything. But maybe that's why it's called disoriental. I don't know, because you're disoriented the whole time.
There's something that I read, I guess like disoriental in French has a specific meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's sort of like referencing that, but I don't think we use the word disoriental in the same way.
We don't. I wasn't sure if it was just a pun based on like disorient and oriental, as in like,
right,
you know, the
old way of calling the quote unquote the East as opposed to the West. Yeah. Yeah, so I think that is sort of like lost in translation a little bit. There is another French book that I read, I don't know, last year, and it was called Based on a True Story by Delphine de Vigan. And it was like based on a true story of the author's life of being stalked by somebody.
Ooh,
and that was the story, is the author is being stalked by somebody. And it was really too long much yeah. like this book. And there's a lot of like, why is this? Why did you make this fiction sort of mm-hmm. thing? And like so much of it felt very like essay-ish. Like, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write about my feelings about this thing. And I got yeah. that in this book too, especially in Side B, is
yes.
she stops and just sort of like talks about like what she thinks about this situation or that situation. And it's not that it's not interesting, but it goes on for a long time.
Right. So I think ultimately here, we do have a very interesting story. I am fascinated by this family. I'm fascinated yes. by her parents and their choices and their politics. Like, that is all very, very interesting. It gets really mixed up and confused, though, and like kind of torn apart. So you never actually get to focus on the very interesting parts of it because we're always getting pulled back and forth. And then on top of it, we've got these, oh God, this is going to sound so rude. We've got these interjections by the narrator that feel really kind of like immature. And I don't know if that's just like an element that did not translate well or not, but like there would be parts where she'd like, okay, now before I tell you this, I need you to understand this. And then there would be like a little paragraph of like context that I felt that felt like so weirdly conversational. But like maybe it didn't lean it, like the rest of the book didn't necessarily lean into being conversational enough to like warrant that choice. And then there were other times where she would use like transcript and it was like it only showed up like twice in the whole book. And that felt really strange, too. It felt like somebody trying to add like a bunch of different genre stuff, but it was so dispersed that it never quite managed to feel natural so much as like, oh, what is this? Like, why is this here all of a sudden? It just, it felt, I don't know, a little scattershot for me.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I like brought up the other French book, because I just wonder, just because they're both like French, I wonder if this is like a cultural thing. Like maybe this is just more of like what French fiction is, because obviously there's very, every country, every region has its own style, you know?
Right.
So I wondered about, I wonder about that. I just haven't read enough French books to know. And then, yeah, the transcripts were odd too, because normally when like people put in like full transcripts like that, they're longer and they include more details, like something. Whereas a lot of the couple transcripts she put in really just felt like this actually could have been sort of summed up.
Right. And also I feel like they always had the caveat of it was kind of like this.
Yeah.
Instead of like normally a transcript when it's used in fiction is like, here is a transcript because like, you know, like this is an actual transcript that we have that we're transcribing from like audio from the moment or something like that. But a lot mm-hmm. of it is like, here's a transcript from my memory, which is like, isn't that basically what you're doing by writing the rest of this book? Like all of the dialogue you're doing from this, we assume is from your memory because that's how you've told us you're telling the story. So it just felt like, why?
Yeah.
It was a strange style choice. Sorry.
It is.
Sorry to rag on it, but
I think we probably sound more critical than we actually felt, because there's certain things that I want to know more about. Like, I would actually want to read Sarah's memoir.
Yeah.
About how that worked. I mean, I can't, reading that part, and so to me, this is like, again, I'm questioning the choices of the author, because it comes in so late. Mm-hmm. In the book, where you find out exactly what happens, and it's sort of vague, a lot of like the details in it, which is fine. It just doesn't, I wanted more of it.
Yeah. And we haven't even gotten to how Kimya is a lesbian, which is an interesting story, like within that culture too, in her relationship with one of her uncles, who's also a homosexual gay man. And like, I thought those were really interesting relationships to kind of explore, like her interest in him and like how he mm-hmm. lived his life. But like I said, it all gets kind of torn to little pieces, so you don't ever actually get to spend much time in any spot all at once. So like, yeah, I think this book is kind of a victim of like the stylized nature that it tried to like take on, because ultimately, there are stories in there that I'm really fascinated by, really interested in, that I think that there's a lot of like meat to, but we never actually quite get to them. One thing I wanted to mention is I looked it up, and Javadi is a screenwriter or a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that's part of it. I wonder if she, you know, like she's writing this book as a movie, kind yeah. of, because I think it could work that way more. But the problem is, again, this is way too much for even a movie. So I don't know if it just does not fit into that the way that it might have if it were a little bit less, or if it were a different medium.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like when she kind of talks about Uncle Number Two, his sexuality, it's sort of like a footnote of like, here is like what Iran is like, in that there's sex changes are not, I don't want to say common, but like legal and accepted.
Right.
Because you can't be gay. You have to be one, or, you know, there's a very strict binary. All that's very interesting, but yeah, we just don't get very much out of it. I would really want to know more about Uncle Number Two, who seemed to be the closest to their family, and mm-hmm. everybody knows he's gay, but nobody will speak about it. And it's like, that's sort of their idea of gay people, even when they're in France and stuff, is like, okay, but you can't like talk about it. I would have liked to know more about that. I don't even really know where her and her sisters were at the end of the book, other than they don't talk about it, but they're okay with it because of a letter from the maternal grandmother. I don't know. It feels like I got so much information that I didn't really need, and not enough about what I wanted.
You wanted, yeah, yeah.
Because it's also strange. It seems to sort of, now I think it was pretty obvious that Kimya was a lesbian. Like, we understood that reading it
mm-hmm.
fairly quickly. But yes. The book sort of kind of makes it into this, like, reveal, almost.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But also, I wanted to... there's a part where she talks in the beginning about how you may recognize her, Kimya, from the newspaper or something, from the thing that she calls the event. And there's, like...
Mm-hmm.
There's this sense that there's this huge buildup to some event. And after what I think was the event happened, I was like, was that the event? And they did the same thing with the reveal that she's a lesbian, too. And I felt like maybe that's context that I'm missing, you know? But I don't know that I would recognize her from a newspaper article from that kind of event. She made it sound like she was notorious or something, or infamous. Like something, like some, yeah. like she committed or was a part of committing a crime. But I'm pretty sure the event was just her father being murdered, right?
Yes. The strange part is, again, it's always weird to have something happen and then we're like, really, we're getting all these thoughts from the narrator, but like she's hiding this one part that she obviously knows. So it's like, why? I don't really necessarily like when it's dragged out like that, and then like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, now I'll tell you what it is. It's like, well, why didn't you explain from the beginning?
Yes.
It just, I don't like, it almost feels like, I don't know, it's just a weird trick that authors do that I don't
maybe
love.
That's part of it too, because I don't want to say that like, the, like, you know, her father died and I was like, that's all. But because obviously, huge, huge thing to happen in somebody's life. Horribly traumatic. I'm not trying to underplay that. Just the it was a strange way to build it up, I think, is more or less what I'm trying to say here.
And I also think, too, like, she's writing to a French audience. I'm sure everybody in France knew about this event, which is also,
did this,
like,
actually happen to her father in real life?
I don't know. I didn't look up to see, because I didn't. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, if somebody writes a novel, do they want, that's like very much based on their life, do they want you to dig into it or not? I assume, I don't know, because there's certain things she put in, like how Darius wrote a letter to the Shah basically saying, like, we don't want this, you know, this is an oppressive regime that we didn't ask for, and criticizing the Shah. And that was sort of the catalyst to start people thinking about revolution mm-hmm. in Iran. And it's like one of those things where I'm like, did she make that up?
I know.
Or did somebody write a letter to the Shah? And then it gets confusing because she includes so much actual history in the form of footnote. I don't know what to believe is made up and what to believe is true. And I don't know if that's important or not, but it's distracting me.
Yeah. And again, not to say that her father's death was unimportant. Just that as a person who's just living their life, I'm not sure I would recognize the child of a murder victim.
Yeah. And that might be, and again, that might be like a, we have a lot bigger country than France does. So I think
that's true.
That's just one of those things where like, because I don't disagree with you at all. Recognizing the child of some, I mean, it would be, it doesn't exactly happen, but I also don't know either, like, was Darius like notorious in France for what he did?
Right.
Like, did people know about it? I don't really know. I couldn't tell because she seems to say that nobody knew about it.
Right. Well, and he spent most of his days walking around the city, you know, for hours and hours and hours. You would think that like people would maybe know, but she also spends a lot of time talking about how nobody in Paris speaks to one another or makes eye contact. So again, maybe it's a cultural thing. Who knows? I don't know for sure. Maybe that's something we just lack context for.
It was kind of interesting, like her whole thing when she started to be rebellious as a teenager, like she was staying out till like 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what did you expect your parents to do?
Yeah.
They are going to be angry. Like, I feel like that's pretty normal. And I understand she was going through a lot, but it's like, yeah, they're going to be mad.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What do you, I mean, probably the answer isn't like throw your kid out and leave her homeless.
No. Yes. No, I was not like not defending what Sarah did either.
No.
That was
but
absolutely
them being upset,
horrible.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But it was just one of the way it was written was like, I don't know. It was just a bit odd.
Made it seem unreasonable that her mother was upset about her being out till 5 in the morning most nights, not knowing where she'd been.
Yeah.
And that was all before cell phones, too. So
yeah, it was funny, too, to see like some of the parallels between this, what she did, and Persepolis, because I'm pretty sure in Persepolis, Marjane also gets into punk rock and stays out late at night.
Mm-hmm.
And things like kind of the same thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
just must have been the time period for sure.
Yeah.
The things that I really liked and thought were well done and that I would have liked to spend a little bit more time with is like, I really enjoyed like the stories about going back to her great grandfather's like harem and stuff. That's just not like a story or I guess a culture that I know a whole lot about. So it's really interesting to get to read about it. I think that's fascinating. And so I liked those bits, especially like the way that they're kind of passed down as like family lore specifically was kind of nice. I think I just wish that they would have been a little bit more chronological so it was easier for me to follow instead of having to like remember who and when everything was. But I liked those parts a lot, like the historical like multi-generational family saga situation was good.
Yeah, I also liked when they moved into that apartment that was right next to that other family.
Oh, yeah, that was
and they
cute.
Talked about how they were basically one family, and it just those I don't know how they wrote about their community was really good. And it was absolutely terrifying when they wrote about when the parts about well when Mina ends up getting shot.
Yeah,
like all of that was it, there was so much tension in that moment. And it was so scary to read that. I think that's why maybe the part of Darius's death felt like a little bit confusing because it wasn't quite written in the same way.
Yeah, I think the other thing is maybe the way that it's broken up. It was easy for me to forget that, like, her parents were, you know, like enemies of the state and like it was really dangerous, the choices that they were making in being revolutionaries, and that like they really were threatened. I think in some ways, maybe as if you're a kid maybe your parents are able to keep that from you, like, a little bit. So maybe they're, mm-hmm. like, she's trying to write it in that way. But I don't know if it came across to me, like, all of the time or enough, I guess, that they were really, like, living life in a really, just really terribly dangerous situation. I don't know. Maybe that's why it kind of felt, like, out of left field. I don't know why, because there is the part where, like, the reason that they have to leave Iran is because the home is, like, attacked and their parents are arrested and stuff. So maybe that was just me having no brain, but who knows?
No, I don't know. It did feel, I think part of it is because, like, if we are to believe that this is based on Javadi's life, she was very young when they were in Iran and, like, mm-hmm. kind of, I want to say, focused on herself, which yeah. I completely understand. She, you know, obviously knew she was different than other girls, her sisters. So I understand that. It's just we didn't get much because I would have liked to understand more about Sarah. Sarah's sort of presented as this, like, oppositional figure to Kimya, but she's very passionate about politics and about the government. And yet she also thinks that, like, having children is the most important thing a woman can do.
Yeah.
And so I would have liked to learn more about that. Like, how do you balance those two?
Mm-hmm.
Because Kimya ends up, obviously, we said she was in the fertility clinic, wanting to get pregnant and have a child. And I don't think we super get a lot of her thought process leading up to it. We get a lot of, like, who she was around, what city she was in. But I don't know. I just don't, like you said at the beginning, we don't really get to know Kimya as much as I would like.
Yeah. She gets lost in the back and forth, I think. If we had spent less time with the back and forth, because it feels like it took time to go, like, okay, now we're going back, now we're coming, you know, that maybe it could have been written more efficiently. And I think maybe that's most of it, is it just doesn't feel like a very efficient way to tell a story.
Yeah.
Not that a book has to be some kind of machine or anything, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's got to keep my attention.
Yeah. I also just question. So, like, she sees Anna from a distance, and then she ends up being, like, best friends with her uncle in a different country. And then it's like, it's very, like, it's so coincidental that it feels honestly fake to me.
Contrived.
The fact that they just, like, randomly meet Pierre and are like, cool, let's have a baby with you.
Yes.
Who does? I mean, it's hard for me to believe that somebody does this. And I also, and I'm not saying, gosh, I do not, she knows France better than I do. But I was surprised that in Paris, she would have to pose as being in a hetero relationship.
Yeah. No, that was really interesting. Oh, actually, I was very, very interested in the different laws regarding, like, how they can go about different fertility treatments. Like, they had to have six rounds of something, had to fail, like, by law in order for them to try artificial insemination, maybe. I don't remember exactly what it was, but that was just really fascinating. I'm kind of interested in just, like, the ethics and laws regarding fertility in general anyway. So
yeah,
just interesting stuff.
It's just the thing. There are so many interesting choices. Like, we get introduced to Pierre. We sort of are supposed to think that they're, like, in a relationship.
Yes.
And then
there's the reveal that he has AIDS.
Yes. And then it turns out we really don't know who he is at all or get to know anything about him, but we are told that he's so great she wants him as the father of her child because she wants her child to have an actual father, even though she's in a lesbian relationship, which is all things that me as an American kind of need a little bit more thinking about.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it was just interesting to read that she was like, no, this child needs to have a father figure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's her choice. And this is a work of fiction, we can assume. But as in a work of fiction, I kind of need to understand a little bit more why that would be so important to her.
Yeah. Is it just because of her relationship with her father? And like, do I know enough about her relationship with her father to be able to like make assumptions about that? It was a little difficult because like, you know, there were times where it seemed like he was really involved and he loved his children. But then there were other times where it seemed like he was completely detached and like obsessed with his goals, which like, I mean, mm-hmm. makes sense. It's hard to be an activist in that way and also be a someone who takes your kids to soccer practice or whatever, I guess, probably. Not that they were going to soccer practice, but I'm just using an example. So, yeah, I don't know. It was interesting. Yeah, once again, one of those things that I think maybe a lot of clarity could have been found in just like straightening up the rest of it a little.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many little things that I liked in this book. It's just there was a lot of other stuff that I think could have been cut down.
I liked, you know, she at the very, very end, she goes and visits her mother, Sarah. And she has dementia or something of some sort, and she's visiting her, and it's after she's found out that she's pregnant, and she kind of can't tell her mom that she is having children because it's not going to really matter anyway. And there was in that moment, like, this kind of lovely, like, sadness to it, and nostalgia, etc., like, and in this kind of through line of their family. So I did really like that ending. The problem is, mm-hmm. is like when I look over the book as a whole, like a cohesive unit, I'm kind of like, why? You know, like, and that I don't mean that to sound really rude, because again, so many parts that I really liked, so many parts that I think were great, but as one piece, I just kind of I'm wondering what exactly about it. What about it?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's so much about children and her. I mean, again, we meet her in a fertility clinic. I don't know whether she's having a kid because she thinks that's what she needs to fulfill her purpose of being a woman, or if that's what she really wants.
There's a part where she talks at length about how she wants to have her child, or she thought she would want to have a child so that she could stay connected to her own youth, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, because that's when she remembers being happiest. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that kind of questioning in there, too. But it does get kind of lost in, like, this idea that her culture that she came from, and even her mother, who had legitimate, like, political ambitions, also believed that her greatest accomplishment was having children. So, yeah, it doesn't, I don't know if any of that is examined in a really kind of directed way or not. I don't know. Interesting. I wish, I mean, maybe for me, maybe just for my American book palette, I wish it was just cleaned up a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. In some places I felt like I knew her sisters more than her.
Mm-hmm.
Also, which is good. I actually really liked those, but I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, though. I do feel like I learned a lot.
Yeah. No, it's one of those things that every time we've read about Iran, I'm always like, I don't know enough about this, mm-hmm. you know, like, and what a huge, like, consequential history they have. And I know so little. Yeah, it just as a glaring hole in my understanding of history.
I think that was interesting too, is the fact that, you know, this was a family who was against the Shah and also against what happened, who came to power after the revolution as well, mm-hmm. which isn't exactly like, just thinking of Persepolis again, which is also about Iran, wasn't her family like related to the original Shah? Or something that.
Possibly, yeah.
So, I don't know. I just thought that was a different perspective, too, to get, instead of sort of, like, the idea that is sort of propaganda pushed on us in the United States that, like, the Shah's reign was so great, and obviously it was not. But, yeah, I liked getting that perspective.
Yeah. No, I think, again, still, like, if you're interested in that history, that part of the world, I still think that this is a really interesting book and one worth reading. Again, all of my perspective here is kind of through my experience with the audiobook, which I'm not sure is the best medium for this. If you're not, especially if you're not used to listening to audio, may not be your best bet. But that being said, both are available on Hoopla. Both the ebook and the audiobook mm-hmm. are available. So you could check those out there for free if you wanted to. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, a little bit uneven for me, but still valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad we read it. Parts that I liked, really liked the history stuff about it, too. And just kind of like a little bit like, what was it called? Celestial Bodies, in that it's so fascinating to read the history and see how different countries get modernized, you know, from like great grandpa having a whole bunch of wives, you know, to then Kimya like being a punk rocker in France. Yeah. Like, it's just so interesting how that kind of thing can happen.
Right. Well, thank you for listening to The Bookstore.
If you would like to support the podcast beyond listening, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookstore or rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
And all of the ways you can contact us can all be found at thebookstorepodcast.com.
Our next book discussion will be September's prompt of a YA middle grade or banned book. And Corinne's choice is The Marrow Thieves by Sherry DeMoline. You can find it at your local bookstore or library and read along with us.
The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becky Yunk and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon and Zach Titus.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm talking a lot. I feel like I'm sorry.